Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany, and I am so thrilled to have you joining me for yet another podcast episode. I am thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Constance Lindsay. She is an assistant professor of educational leadership in the School of Education at UNC Chapel Hill. Dr. Lindsay obtained a doctorate in human development and social policy from Northwestern University in 2010. Since leaving Northwestern, Dr. Lindsay has worked in educational policy in various contexts, applying her research training both in traditional studies and also in the creation of new systems and policies regarding teachers. Her research first focuses on the creation and maintenance of high-quality, diverse educator workforce and understanding how policies and practices contribute to or mitigate racialized education gaps in K-12 education. Her research has served as an evidence base for several policy actions and reports around teacher diversity at the federal, state, and local levels. Dr. Lindsay has been featured on Hidden Brain NPR and PBS NewsHour. Dr. Lindsay is a What Works Clearinghouse certified reviewer and was in a cohort 5 of the Fordham AEI Emerging Education Policy Scholars Program. As you can tell, Dr. Lindsay has a beautiful background in research and education policy reform, so it's an incredible honor to have her on the podcast and join me. We discussed her most recent research that looked at the relationship between having Black teachers on Black students and what those outcomes in terms of special education or gifted program placement was. So it was really fascinating to have that conversation, and I'm so excited to share it. So let's jump into it. Hello, hello, and welcome to Conscious Pathways. I am joined by Dr. Lindsay. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on here. Just you know, your background is always really interesting, and of course, your body of research is really interesting to me. So I was really excited to reach out and that you were open to coming and joining me in conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you got your start in education?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually was an economics major in undergrad and wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. I had the opportunity to study abroad in Ghana in West Africa. And through that experience, got really interested in like inequality and social policy. And that was after my sophomore year in college. And so I came back and I was like, okay, I need to find a way to sort of make this economics major relevant for, you know, something different than going into to business or law school, which was kind of what everybody did with it, you know, back in those days and still now. And so took a lot of classes, cross-listed with public policy and just thinking about ways to apply those skills in different areas. And so happened to stumble upon the field of public policy, which actually I didn't know existed. I went to Duke for undergrad, and Duke actually has its own public policy school, but I literally did not know that public policy as a sort of field you can major in existed. So anyway, fast forward, ended up going to get my master's in public policy from Georgetown, born and raised in DC, thought that I wanted to do international work, and quickly kind of realized that there was plenty of work to be done here in the States around issues of social policy, inequality, and in particular thinking about, you know, how to make things better for Black kids. And so that rolled me over into education. And after my master's, I went and worked at the Federal Department of Education. And there I was in the Office of Vocational and Adult Education, which is an interesting office. It wasn't quite fully aligned with what I thought I would be doing. But, you know, but I learned a lot. But that office was mostly focused on adult education, right? So non-traditional programs for people who are past the age of 16. So things like, you know, adult basic education, GEDs, programs like that. And sort of through that experience, I realized a couple of things, which is one, that I wanted to go back to school and, you know, continue developing my skills as a researcher, because all the people in that office that were kind of doing the work that I found interesting and I saw myself doing had doctorates. And also that I wanted to focus on sort of things earlier in the pipeline, right? Because if somebody ends up in a, you know, if they're still having literacy challenges or they're pursuing adult basic education, something has happened like earlier along the line that's sort of derailed them from getting, you know, from actualizing, I guess I should say. And so got super interested in education policy research and in particular thinking about racialized achievement gaps in education. And that's what led me back to grad school. And so went to grad school at Northwestern. And at Northwestern, I had a fellowship in education policy research that paid for my graduate school. And that is the medium to short version, short to medium version of it. I'm interested in education research in particular.
Yes, I love that. And I agree. If I would have known what I know now during my educational journey about different degrees I could have gotten, like I didn't know social work was a thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, that's essentially what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know public policy was a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I appreciate all the things I majored in, but when I look back, I'm like, see, I think that was the path I was trying to do. So that's amazing that you found your way and you got to exactly where you needed to be. And so speaking about, you know, your background in research, of course, you know, educational research and policy is such an integral part of our advocacy journey, making sure mm-hmm. that, you know, the educational lives of students are equitable and inclusive and the way that we imagine education to be. That is a pretty big part of that, is making sure that there's policies in place and making sure that we're researching the right things and getting that information out there. So, you know, speaking about your research and your background in educational policy and research, you know, the way that I found you was a recent article that was talking about some research that you recently did on the kind of correlation between special education and Black students and mm-hmm. having Black teachers. Mm-hmm. Are you able to kind of go into that a little bit with me? Kind of how did you start to study that and kind of what was the pathways for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So so this paper recently came out in the American Education Research Journal. It's actually open access. So if people are interested in it, they can go ahead and download it. And this work is actually, we've been working on this topic for a while, and we have a few papers. And what we're trying to do across these papers is basically show in a very large data set, or using very large data sets, the impact of having a Black teacher on a Black student. And so this paper in particular looks at what happens in terms of both gifted placement and special education placement when a Black student is matched to a Black teacher. And so basically what we're able to do is we're able to take 5 years of data from North Carolina. We're able to look at the Black students over that time. So it ends up being about 120,000 students. And we're able to say, you know, on average, what happens in terms of your designation for special education placement if you have a Black teacher? And also we look at gifted placement, although we don't really find anything for gifted placement. So basically what we're trying to do in this paper is we're trying to look at what we call discretionary placements. So if you think of a teacher as a gatekeeper, right, particularly in elementary school, over the course of the year, maybe they see that a student needs additional assistance, and they have the responsibility, in the case of special ed, to refer that student, right? And then there's assessments made about disability status. Or if they see that they need additional, you know, challenges by being placed in gifted education, the teacher also makes that recommendation, and then a number of processes sort of happen after that. But you can think of the teacher as gatekeeper. And so we were really interested basically in exploring whether what happens if you're matched to a Black teacher for Black students, what happens in terms of disability identification, And so what's super interesting about this paper is one of the very nice things about North Carolina is they make their data available to researchers. You know, obviously it's, you know, all the issues around privacy and everything are attended to, and you have to get an IRB and all that stuff. But they make these data available. And so we're able to actually see the disability classifications. And so what we end up finding is that for the disability designations that have more discretion, so that are not as sort of cut and dry as other more straightforward disabilities, and the disabilities that have a little bit more stigma, so things like emotional disturbance, that for Black students, being matched to a Black teacher decreases the incidence of being referred for those disabilities. And there are, in particular, outsized impacts for young Black boys. And so we thought that was super interesting.
Yes, yes. I also found that super, super interesting as I was kind of looking through the article and looking through, you know, some of those outcomes. Because we know with, you know, Black boys in terms of kind of academic opportunities, right, that these opportunities aren't always afforded to Black boys particularly, and especially when we're thinking about exclusionary discipline practices, right? And so these types of interventions, whether they're getting either more support that they need or they're getting more challenges that they need, right? They're getting the services that they need and are relevant to them. We know that that has a really long-lasting impact on, you know, outcomes, right? And then we kind of see how this funnels into that school-to-prison pipeline, and it funnels into more exclusionary disciplinary practices for young boys when they're either being overly you know, pushed into special education when they may not need those types of services. They might just need something else, or they're kind of flying under the radar somehow. And so their disabilities aren't being seen in the same way. And so they're kind of getting, you know, punished or disciplined for things that are either developmentally appropriate for the age range we're looking at, or, you know, all these other factors. So, and that's one of the reasons why, like, I know, and you know, that this research is so incredibly important. So what do you think like the policy implications of something like this would be?
Yeah, so but before I go to that, I'll just mention that we also have a paper that does the same thing with exclusionary discipline. That's a 2017. It's the same co-author and myself. And we do find same thing. So when Black students are matched to a Black teacher, less likely to receive exclusionary discipline punishments. And also, right, yes. And also driven by Black boys. And so I really want to highlight that and underscore it, because sometimes a lot of the nuance gets lost when these things go viral or they get a lot of press attention. And it's really important to understand those nuances because they really help us out with the policies. So, so when we're thinking about policy, right, it's not that we're just saying, like, you know, plop a Black person in front of Black students, right? We think there's some underlying mechanisms that we can't necessarily see as quantitative researchers that look at these very huge data sets, but that plenty of people have written on and investigated, and that some of our work might shed light on. So, for example, thinking about, like, the idea that the more discretionary disability placements do have this response to being matched to a Black teacher, I think leads us to say that perhaps white teachers need training around implicit bias, or maybe all teachers, we should say. There also might be, you know, stakeholders might also think about ways that they can change the disability identification process to make sure that it's more fair and that it's accurately capturing what students need. And I'll say that this is also something that we grappled a little bit with when we were writing up the results, because you want students to get the services that they need, right? And so there's this really interesting sort of back and forth in the special education literature in particular about whether Black students are overrepresented or underrepresented. So I think it's a very, like, nuanced discussion. But there's evidence across our papers that there are some cultural mismatch things happening with white teachers that likely are leading to some of these results.
Yes, yes, yes. And so, like, it's one of those things that, you know, when we're in the classroom as teachers and we're, you know, working with students and we're going through programs, right, you know, from lived experience, we can see this and we can say, like, this is definitely happening. And sometimes without that data component, it's not always heard from the lived experience. Mm-hmm. So it is always nice to have that data component as well to say, hey, no, this is a legitimate problem. We have the data, we have the background, we have all of the stuff that is mm-hmm. alluding to this being a problem. And like you said, there's a lot of nuance that goes into it. So I agree, we can't just put anyone in front of the students like, well, you know, we have Black people in there. But it's like, well, yes, like, you know, in education, you know, I come from an early childhood background. And so I know that a lot of the actual, you know, workforce of teachers are women of color, mm-hmm. right? It's predominantly, like, mostly it's women of mm-hmm. color, right? And so I think it kind of leads into the same with like K through 12 education, right? You see a little bit less, but there are quite a few mm-hmm. Women of color within the field of education and teaching. We're not necessarily as represented in, you know, the leadership mm-hmm. aspect of that, which is also another big talking point of like, who is making these decisions and who is evaluating this, right? But I think it also alludes to like our teacher preparation programs, kind of what you were mentioning, that we need to have more kind of cultural pedagogy, culturally relevant, sustaining, responsive pedagogy. And we need to be teaching this to, you know, early teachers, the teachers who are going through programs to learn these things, right? We know that the student body is just going to be becoming more and more diverse as the years go on. Mm-hmm. Like it's the data showing us our country is just being more diverse by the second, right? And so this isn't an issue that's just going to go away because we willed it to go away. It's really important that we're actually, you know, looking at what the students need, and we're actually, you know, training teachers to prepare to work with a diverse, you know, student body base. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, I mean, you kind of mentioned this a little bit already, but for your findings, kind of how does this connect with kind of educational equity and like the values within social justice itself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, I think right now there's so much discussion around what the teaching workforce is going to look like post COVID. Mm. There's, you know, discussions about whether we have teacher shortages, the extent to which we have teacher shortages, and where on earth we're going to get like the high quality, diverse teachers that we need. And yeah. All of that, in my opinion, is a social justice issue because Black children tend to be in high needs, hard to staff schools. And they also really need to see people that look like them. And I think Black boys in particular need to see Black men teaching them, or Black people, but Black men teaching them. But we're not going to get there unless we sort of pay attention to the larger challenges that the teaching profession is facing in terms of pay. Mm-hmm. And so some of that, I think all of that very much is a social justice issue. One of the things, so my colleagues and I published a book in 2021 where we talk about teacher diversity and some of these issues. And one of the things that we talk about is thinking about indebtedness in particular for would-be teachers of color. And, you know, if you are a college educated person and maybe the first person in your family to go to school, where we want you to come teach for us because we know that you know, this will be a great thing for our kids, but we're also, I think Gloria Ladson-Billings talks about educational debt, right? We're asking the people who sort of were victims of the debt to also have to come and solve it. mm-hmm. And so to me, all of that is a social justice issue. And, you know, to the extent that we can lower debt burdens for students or erase them, you know, or just, you know, if you say you're going to teach, you get to go to school for free, which that is happening in some places. Or even engage in debt cancellation for teachers. All of that is intricately related here. And, you know, even the extent to which the entering salary for teachers is so much lower of their peers that are going into other jobs, and the gap just gets wider over time. All of those things you'd have to address, and it would eliminate some of the teacher diversity issues, not all of it, but it would go a long way, I think.
I absolutely agree, right? Because like everything you said, right, that the educational debt, like we're asking them to come in and essentially solve this problem that they had no hand in creating.
Right.
You know.
And might have been victimized by themselves, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And so that's a hard ask. That's a big ask, and that's a hard ask. And I think, you know, first recognizing that, you know, we're asking a lot. Especially of educators, and knowing the state of the field of education mm-hmm. right now, that it is It is incredibly difficult, mm-hmm. and it's only continuing to get incredibly difficult, especially as we're seeing the outcomes of, you know, 2020 and kind of moving forward from that stage of our kind of lives. And I think that it's tricky, but like having a diverse workforce is so important. So not only do we need to be recruiting, you know, diverse educators, like that, just one, bringing them into the field, mm-hmm. right? And the same time looking at how are we, you know, doing our recruitment efforts from like that leadership perspective, and how are we helping to retain our diverse workforce, right? Because it's just, you know, we can look at the data and we can look at the lived experience, right? That it's hard enough to be a Black woman in the United States as it is, but then a Black woman in the workplace,
yes.
is a whole other thing, a whole other set of challenges that we need to go through in addition to just everything else. So providing ways that educators can feel, you know, supported, that they can feel valued, that they are, you know, being treated with dignity, mm-hmm. and value and respect and all of those great things. So how are we retaining our workforce? How are we recruiting our workforce, right? And how are we also supporting educators to pursue this field? Like you said, with, you know, canceling student debt for teachers, right? It's, you know, you pay all this money to get in this field. And then, you know, there are some incentives to go even higher in education, get your master's, you know, get more of that. There are some incentives, but not enough to make it,
yes.
worth it, right? Because you're already in thousands of dollars in debt.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And it's not like the pay increase you get for the master's really pays for the master's. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The struggle is real, yeah. out here. I see it and I get it. Mm-hmm. So going a little bit back to, because I know you've had a couple of different studies, and you also talked about your book, which is also really, really fascinating, interesting. And so your book, what moved you to start kind of co-writing that book and kind of going in that direction with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it was just a sort of set of circumstances that came together. So like I said, so my other co-author and I have another paper about exclusionary discipline. And then... Yeah. Us together with another set of co-authors have another paper that looks at the long run impacts of having a same race teacher. And there was a lot of interest. There still is a lot of interest in that particular paper because we basically show that, you know, for Black students, having a Black teacher early on really matters for longer term outcomes. And so we were asked to do a lot of speaking and blogging and thinking about issues around teacher diversity. And so with one of those co-authors and then another guy, Mike Hansen. So it's Mike Hansen and Seth Gershenson are my co-authors. Mike is at the Brookings Institute. Seth is at American University. We just all have been thinking about issues around teacher diversity for a few years. Mm-hmm. And so we said, now that we have all of these really nice empirical studies to complement a lot of the qualitative work and historical work that's been done around this issue, let's try to put it all in one place and then also offer guidance for policymakers. Because we're in a moment where people, and this may change, but it seems like policymakers at the state, the local, state, and federal levels are interested in teacher diversity for a number of reasons. And so we thought it would be a good idea to put all the research and policy recommendations in one place.
I love that. I'm so excited. I can't wait to read it. That sounds right up my alley. Yeah. I'm like, oh, yes. Very exciting. But yeah, it's good to hear that this is something that is on the minds of policymakers from, you know, state, federal, you know, national levels, mm-hmm. because it is something that is incredibly important and something that we know, you know, is incredibly important for students to see themselves represented within their school community, right? And so like the impact of that alone, just seeing other people in positions that look like you and are representative of you, right? And can advocate for you on a deeper level, especially in terms of getting, you know, what you need, is so important, so great. So on that subject, tell me, how do you reimagine education?
Oh, okay. that's a good question. That's a really interesting question because I think we're at a moment where we are getting away from what I think are essential things for public education to do in terms of sort of getting everybody on the same page about what it means to be a citizen and, you know, participate in our democracy and interpret information and learn how to be with people who might be different than you. And so, you know, I'd like to reimagine an education system where, you know, students have the opportunity to be in diverse environments and also get high quality instruction and, you know, gain the skills to make them, you know, critical participants in the world, because things are rapidly changing. And so, I think content mastery is important, but I think just the ability to be a critical thinker in this world is what's like most important right now. You know, the ability to figure out what's real, you know, separate the truth from lies, you know,
that's a lie.
Right. The real from the fake, to be able to, you know, think creatively about problems, right? Because, you know, now we have artificial intelligence, we have other things that where sort of, you know, memorization of information and other more traditional skills will still be important. But really what's going to sort of, you know, I think critical thinking and analysis is like what schools need to be working on. And also this sort of, you know, democracy with a small d piece, like, you know, we are living in a rapidly diversifying world and we're going to have to figure out how to coexist with one another. And schools can be a place where that happens. I think what we're seeing in a lot of places is that there's more like tribalization as more privatization occurs, where people are just selecting to be with people who look like them or who think like them. And I think ultimately in the long run, that's not going to produce sort of the pluralistic society I think we want. I don't know if people want that or not. but I would hope that
I want it.
Yeah, right. I would hope. Well, we have to have it, right? I would hope that we can get to a place where schools can be a positive force for that.
Yes, I love that, especially going into that critical thinking piece, and it has me thinking about something that's been on my mind a lot recently, and that's, you know, technology in schools, mm-hmm. and, you know, especially, you know, digital literacy and social media and all these different aspects of, you know, everyday life now for all mm-hmm. of us, right? Especially for students. And as they're, you know, learning and critically thinking, and they're kind of in this space where they're constantly online,
yes.
you know, how are we bringing in those like 21st century skills into our educational spaces to prepare students for a world that we can't even imagine? Right? We have this presence of AI that I don't think the average person really has a lot of understanding on, but it is a part of our mm-hmm. lives in such like a very intermeshed way. Mm-hmm. And I think that our ability to think critically about information and our ability to think critically about the things that we see, and even the things that we see might not even actually be real. So really being able to have, you know, the ability to just discern, I think would be really, really important, especially in schools. And as we're like reimagining what that looks like, right, really transforming education to serve students in the best way possible, again, for a future that we can't possibly mm-hmm. imagine what that's going to even look like at this point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yes, I adore that type of reimagining. Just really, let's get some critical thinking into schools. Let's get outside of schools. Let's just get it. Can everyone get some?
Yeah. Well, you know, the adults might be gone, but we can help the children.
We can help the children. Exactly. Exactly. Like, come on, kids. Let's get on the critical thinking train. Thank you so much for joining me and talking about your recent research. I hope that you will join me again
yes,
in another episode,
sure.
and we can talk about other things yeah, you research sure. and other musings on education. Is there anything that you're working on, or can my audience find you anywhere on the internet?
Sure. I guess I'm on X still. It's Dr. underscore Constance L. I'm very random on there, though. It's just a train of thought. And then when I have research that comes out, I'm posting it there.
Love it.
Yeah. And if you can find me there. I also have a link tree. If you find me on Twitter, you can click on the link tree. And I have a bunch mm-hmm. of things up there for people, a bunch of resources around teacher diversity. And some of my other scholarship is up there, too. I'm also on Google Scholar.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you so much. And I'll put all of those things in the show notes. Okay. So if you're curious, including the research as well. So if you're curious to see anything that Dr. Lindsay is working on, I'll have that in the show notes below. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me. This was absolutely wonderful to just hear more about the background of the study and how you got here and kind of, you know, what your findings were. And of course, like the policy implications for that. I really just appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a rating or review. It really, really helps the podcast to grow and reach more listeners just like you. If you want to see more from Conscious Pathways, you can follow me on Instagram at conscious.pathways. If you want to see more about what I talk about in terms of education, policy, social justice, you can follow me on LinkedIn at Brittany Carey. And if you're interested in the video version of this podcast, I do put it on YouTube. So hi, YouTube. So come join us over there if you're interested in that. If you want to support the podcast, I do have a Patreon. So through, you know, the paid membership on Patreon, you can ask questions that I can answer directly on the podcast, or I can ask an expert and get that answer for you. You can also get access to my newsletter, which will talk about social justice and education. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast, it helps me to get equipment, to find more guests, to find partnerships, to just do really more fun things on this podcast. So if you're interested, you can join us on Patreon. But of course, no pressure if not, just you listening is enough support as it is. I just appreciate that. And until next time, navigate your conscious journey with kindness and courage. And until then, I'll see you back here for more transformative conversations in education. Bye!